For he's always glad when everything's bad, cause then his collections are good, 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 good. His nose knows no pathway of roses, no flowers that bloom in the spring. For it's catch as catch can for the scavenger man. Posterity, where is thy? All right, we're done.
That was so good, man.
Hey there, this is Seth Waters from Channel 9. We're here at Deb Intersection in Las Vegas. How are you doing?
I am doing great.
Fantastic. This is the awesome Kathleen Dollard. Tell us about what you do.
So after 30 years independent, I started working for a small software company.
Oh, that's fun.
It's called Reel. It's at engagereel.com if anybody wants to come look for us. And I'm the director of engineering.
Okay.
Which the cool thing about that role is partially that I get to define that role.
Nice.
And partially that I can, I do have responsibilities for the company, but I also can embed into a project. And my boss, the CEO, Fernando Cardenas, said, well, you've been in Microsoft land a long time. I think you should have an experiment.
Spread your wings.
Spread your wings. Nice. Have new experience. And so he said, I'm going to embed you. And this was shortly after I started with the company, so I was still feeling a little insecure.
Sure, sure.
I'm going to embed you in a project, which is Python with Django, to produce some very high-end websites. They're very exciting sites that we're creating. I'm developing on a Mac. I'm using IntelliJ. We're going out to AWS, deploying to AWS with all these open source LAN things. We use pip install, we use npm, we use configure, we use ship it, blah, blah, on and on. And then we go out, of course, we're using Git as our kind of hub for all of this. And then we go off and we're using AWS SQS and AWS NS, and we're using all these pieces. There's nothing Microsoft in sight. Mm-hmm. And it's like such a change for me to go over there. But the cool thing, and I think it's a really profound thing about the state of the industry, is it wasn't that far. When you go to Django, they name things differently. I still don't understand why they call what in MVC is a controller. The thing that does that job, it's called a view. I have no idea
Interesting.
Why.
Interesting.
I know there's somebody who's gonna write to you and say, I know why. but I don't, and I don't care.
Yeah.
Because there was a little translation process. There was a few things to learn. But in all of a sudden now, remember, Python, we're talking full-on dynamic.
Yeah.
We're talking no curly braces, no semicolons.
Lots
your
of tabbing.
Indent, well, yes. Your indentation is what drives the whole story. But IntelliJ is so good, after very few days, that just wasn't there.
Sure.
And I have no idea how they do IntelliSense as well as they do in a dynamic language. Mm-hmm. This is just a mystery. It's magic. It's just the magic.
Yeah.
So it was amazing to me to work with this team, with a couple of people that were, that were from more of a strongly tight background, and to see us all move into this. Now, we took a few things along. Our thinking stayed strongly typed. So we didn't make variables and then change them into something else just because we could.
Yeah.
We very rarely added new properties to objects on the fly, which of course you can.
Sure.
But for my team, that would have been disruptive. I sort of think maybe that's a generalization for all Python, but I don't know that yet. Mm-hmm. I've never really had a chance to sit down with somebody who was full on Python for years. Now, my son works with Python for Prismata, and he worked on the servers for that, and he used Python for massive scalability on the Prismata servers. And that's Prismata with a T. It's a really cool game. If anybody likes, Hearthstone's one of the things it gets compared to. And it's a fantastic game once you get past the what the heck is going on here.
Cool, yeah.
Not for me, because it's my brain's not that big.
Yeah.
So anyway, we had a great time. It was great. It was wonderful. It made me realize that we're kind of just catching up in the Windows land. This idea that Microsoft is going open source is so just catching up with the rest of the world. And I know it's wonderful stuff we're building. And one thing about playing catch up is you do get to learn from everything that's out there. So I'm really pleased with what we're doing right now, blurring all these boundaries. And it sort of got me thinking about the arc of what we're doing.
Sure.
And I think right now that's one piece of these big changes that are going on over the long term. You know, we look at this big arc, and we're still young in computer science, and in the whole field is, pick your date, 60, 70 years old,
it's
the
not
whole
very
field.
Old, yeah.
Yeah. So we're kind of in the middle of that arc, and right now this whole open source thing is, it's a great step that
That's
direction.
That's awesome. So tell us a little bit, because Django is something I looked at a little bit ago, I don't know, a couple years ago, and it looked very interesting. It looked very easy to use. It felt like it was a response to Ruby on Rails at the time. It's like, hey, we like Python, so let's do Python. Ruby people love their language, and there's good reason to. It felt like it was a response. So tell me, what was it like working in Django? Which, by the way, you can put on Azure now if you want.
Absolutely. I have not had it. Well, you can put in Visual Studio.
Yeah.
So there's Visual Studio, Python, and Django tools. I've not yet used them, so I can't speak to anything about them. For me, because of what we were trying to accomplish, it felt much more like an answer to MVC than an answer to Ruby. Now, I'm not a Ruby coder, and if I had come from Ruby, and there may be Ruby coders out there saying I'm an idiot for saying that, mm-hmm. but coming from the .NET background, then I definitely felt like this is what we're doing for MVC, and that's it, there's no razor type thing. We did other things to create the HTML, but mm-hmm. there's some things Django will do for that, and then we enhance them further. But that's awesome. The front end guy who I'm just in awe of. You know, front end is.
So let's talk a little bit about sort of the synonyms, because obviously when you're looking at MVC, you're looking at the model view and the controller. How do you handle database connections with Django? Is there a special framework? Is it part of Django? How does it work?
So Django has what's called a model, which is a convenient name.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. It's great. It's a model. And the model does a couple of things for you, including setting up for your database. So it has a very smooth validation story from what you want in your database through to what you want in your front end. And this model, it's a little bit like code first, and it does allow you to do migrations. Mm-hmm. And they're that's one of the things that we've changed over the last four mm-hmm. or 5 years, is that we're just living and dying on migrations. And it has a decent migration story. Migrations always struggle with a few things, like actual data migrations, structure migrations. There's still places. But it's a pretty good both validation and then setting you up for your migrations in this model that it uses.
I see. So let's move on to the controller. You mentioned that they call the controller the view, which kind of seems counterintuitive. So they call it the view. How is it different than our controllers that we're used to in MVC?
Well, it's really pretty much the same. So you're coming in and you're stating what your endpoint is doing. It's limited to GET and POST because it's not, as far as I know, it is. I didn't play with it any further. We were using it for just GET, POST, PUT. I think once we used DELETE, but mm-hmm. just using for normal REST endpoints. And it's got its routing strategy, which is very simple and straightforward. It's not at all like the strategy within the .NET MVC, mm-hmm. ASP.NET MVC, where I saw it. But we have to remember that I was using it for one project.
Right.
I was not trying to find everything that it could do. But then what we did from there is what you would do in any good project.
Yeah.
We called to a service. We told the service to do its work.
Nice.
Because we kept the endpoint then completely separate, although it was all within the same package. I get a little confused with package versus project sometime because what we call a project is a package, and what we call a solution is a project. I think I got that right.
Yeah.
But yeah. So anyway, it's a very simple model. Then you go to a service, and a service is a service.
Yeah,
is
I
a
mean
service,
it's gonna be what it's gonna be.
So that was basically our service. I mean, I'm calling it a service, but let me clarify that. This was a service layer in our application, so it was just calling off of the view as quickly as possible to do the work. This is, at this point, not a full REST call to another server. It's just a call inside that package to a method on what something we're calling
awesome.
A service.
So what about how do they render views? Is there because I know in Node they have Jade and they have other types of view engines that you can use. In MVC we have Razor, we have the old school one that we had before, and then there's other ones too. What did they use for rendering?
I knew you would do this because it's not hard to do. You would find a question that I did not know the answer to.
No.
So that's great. You did, and that's fine. I actually had somebody working on the front end for me, and I really focused on the back end mm-hmm. and preparing for them so that the endpoints made sense for them, the data we sent back by JSON made sense, and all of that part of it back to their AJAX calls. And the work that they did to create that you know, that the whole story about magic. Getting down to the HTML. That was Ty's magic. So Ty took care of that for me.
Nice.
And was awesome at it. Absolutely great. And it's such a good attitude because we're very highly agile. So we consider a long project in terms of getting the first minimum viable product out the door 2 months is long. So we're really rocking.
That
okay?
is fast.
What that means is that front-end person is the one who's always at the end, always on the deadline, because we don't give him what he, you know, the final of what he needs until, well, we got to go now. And so it's an interesting position, and it was a great team, and the folks on it was just really...
That's awesome.
Really good to have front-end developers like, sure, I can change that right now. Sure, I can change that right now. Because that was the role that the front-end developers play in a very fast-moving
So I operation. Think this speaks to a larger issue, because we've talked about various principles, but it feels like, in the end, it's all sort of same-ish. And you have many years' experience as a developer.
many.
I don't know. Maybe same as me. I don't know.
Yeah, a long time. Yeah, we just say a long time.
And so you have all of this experience. When you moved to Django, I'm sure it was like getting in. It was cold at first. But did you start finding these similarities and these patterns and just development that we all should just know?
Yeah, I did. And I think that it's a really good question. And because I have been around for a frighteningly large percentage of the time that we have had computer science, I don't even think I'll say how long it's been. It's been a real, let's just say long, okay. So I've watched this arc of what we've done and how we've changed, and there's been these really big changes that have gone on in terms of the internet and now moving off of local boxes and off of hardware. These are big changes, but they're underneath some really super consistencies. Now that's changed in terms of like the ages. So, you know, like we would have had the age of language development in the 80s and 90s. I know that our big languages were created way back in the late 50s and early 60s. But the 80s and 90s were these big times of language development. And I think the last, you know, really big language that I think about being created was probably C# in 2000. So we had that time. And then we had the time of the great testability. And that pushed us both into IOC and into a different relationship with our databases, really fundamentally different. And so now we hardly even use the phrase ORM before, because we just expect these things. Our database isn't off there sitting on a box and we decide how to talk to it. In many development platforms, and so similar here in Django and MVC, Indie Framework, we build a model, we let it do the work.
Yeah.
We define our validations there. We do all these things there. So this was all part of this arc around, I'm going to call it testability. It was a lot of things happened in there. And then we've had this arc, which the rest of the world has been on for quite a while,
right,
to what we now refer to as open source and cross-platform.
I see.
So this is, you know, I think we're kind of at the end of that with Microsoft catching up. And what I believe, well, there's one other one that went in there, which is we had a little blip through process. Mm-hmm. And that was like a solvable problem, I feel like. So things like, I think it's hard for people to really realize how impossible it was to set up a complex dev environment in something like 1980.
Yeah.
Our dev environments were simple because they had to be. You were doing everything in batch files. And it was, you know, to do really complex things in your dev setup would have really hurt your overall productivity.
Quality, yeah.
So now we have, you know, all these tools from NuGet to pip to, you know, all these things, and the whole arc of what we do for process is very good right now. With a piece that I couldn't have seen coming, which is all of that needs a linchpin right in the middle. It needs that spot in the middle that everything can rely on.
It ties it together.
And that thing that we all rely on is Git, or something you're using that's very similar to Git. So Git is our linchpin, man. I mean, you change a branch, and that's what causes your continuous integration or continuous deployment story to happen, and all of that can hook up to say, oh, there's a new branch. So we've been through, you know, these other things, and what I believe we're starting into right now, the new step. That is starting slower than I would like, but then we're still on that testability arc too.
Sure.
So, you know, these things sometimes take a while. Is what happens in production? What's going on in production? And we're hitting that, I think, from a couple of directions. One, of course, is DevOps. Mm-hmm. We talk about DevOps. And the another is our logging strategy. And I know logging sounds like the most boring thing in the world. But when we look at what happens with ETW in the operating system, event source in .NET, and I honestly don't know the deep logging story off of the Windows platform, we have this ability to log a lot of information. And what many people don't realize is it's happening or able to happen right now. So you could right now do a few switches on any .NET application that runs, I'm not sure how far back we'd go, but it would maybe be all of .NET. It would certainly be since 4. Mm-hmm. You could run a few switches and know every exception when it happens and a little bit about where it happened. And that's just a switch because the .NET framework and the operating system are already having this conversation about what's going on. Well, who's logging what has just been increasing to where it's pretty complete. But logging says, I'm going to go out of my process with a bunch of data. All of this data has to be serializable mm-hmm. because it's going off the box.
Sure.
And it is then all the things you have with serializable data. It's a snapshot, it's, you know, once in time and all that. So the other thing that ASP.NET is bringing in, ASP.NET 5, is bringing in another new piece to that production story, mm-hmm. which is the diagnostic source. So we have event source to go off the box, and not off the box necessarily, off the process. That's the big key. Out of process, so we serialize. And then the new thing is called diagnostic source. And that's in process, letting you do some brand new things.
So we did, I did the interview before you, I was with Anthony Vanderhorn on Glimpse, and he mentioned diagnostic source, and I sort of felt like it was this sink where you can put stuff into. But beyond that, maybe I didn't understand it right, maybe you can help us understand what diagnostic source is and why it's more than logging.
Okay, that is actually a really good question. And I believe that we have a lot of unwrapping to do here. Okay, not me today with you, but as an industry.
Sure.
I think that we say, oh, we can do that, and somebody's going to come up with this or that. I mean, you look at some of what people have done with Roslyn or something else.
Yeah.
Here's the tool, now you can play. So there's some of that. But I want to give you a good, solid idea of what you can do with it. So I think that you want to be semantic in nature, which means that in your code where your logic and what you have written today, all the code you have written today, you have a line of code that calls to a method. And that could be, well, inside ASP.NET, inside ASP.NET itself, it could be begin request. Okay, so something is happening and you want to say, yeah, this is pretty significant. Maybe you're starting a calculation, maybe it's midnight, maybe it's the end of the year. There's a lot of things that you might say, hey, this is significant. Mm-hmm. So then you call off to a method, and this method can do whatever it needs to do, and that development of that, the thinking about that, is entirely separate. Now, we've deliberately decoupled it from thinking about how the application runs. So the application is responsible for knowing where its important points are, mm-hmm. and now we've documented that. So if it's a bunch of confusing code because you're taking some R method and reproducing it in C sharp for some reason, you can say, we're starting this, we're ending this. So mm-hmm. you know, you're deciding what's important. But then you go to this method, and this method gets to decide what to do now. Now, this is there's a lot of samples on this in the semantic logging application block for logging with event source. And so that's a place people can go for this generalized idea of semantics. Mm-hmm. But what we can do with a diagnostic source is once we get there, if we want to, we can write off to event source. And get that stuff, you know. Push it off the process. You're very, very, very fast. In general, you can do about 10,000 loggings. You can log about 10,000 things per second.
Which is quite a lot.
Without finding it in your performance, okay?
Oh, wow.
Now, that is assuming you're not doing a lot of big serialization and things like that that would cause a problem. But if it's just, you know, this
happened. Pushing it off to a queue, for example, is really fast.
Yeah. Well, it's even faster than that.
Oh, really?
Because it goes into the operating system. It's a call deep into the operating system. The operating system buffers this. ETW in the operating system is a beautiful piece of work. And what's kind of shocking is that we talk about this and people go, wow, EventSource, I haven't heard about that. ETW has been there since Vista.
And what does ETW really stand for those that might not
know? Event Tracing for Windows. Okay. So, and there's some old documentation on it. I think a lot of it kind of misses the point. I do have a course on Pluralsight.
Oh, okay.
And I apologize. If you watch my Pluralsight course, it didn't need to be 4 hours long, and I'm sorry.
I'm sure
I wanted to tell you a lot of details instead of just saying, this is the little bit you need to know. I'm sorry. But it's all there.
Yeah.
So that's all out of proc. But now we're in this method. And the next thing that we can do is, we may not log, okay, is we can start building up state about what we're doing right now. So let's just take the example of, let's take an example of routing. I assume this is in the routing system of ASP.NET. I can say, well, I'm starting to route, and I'm making this decision, and I'm making this decision, and I'm making this decision. And each of those can basically build up state about that particular request.
Mm-hmm.
So we can, because we're in process, we're in one thing. We're not like with logging in event source, you just are sticking out a snapshot every time you call the method. Now we can build something, and this thing can be maintained. The easiest to think about is through the life of setting up routing or the life of the request.
I see.
And there's amazing things we can do once we say that we're going to do that around decision making. Now, the first thing that we can easily say, and we can do once we go to this method, and we don't even really need diagnostic hub for that, is that we could, it's easier with diagnostic source, it's easier with it, but we can sample. So we can say that depending on my current server load, I want to dedicate this percentage to getting more information.
Got
so
it.
So let's say I get 100 requests a second, and I say with this server load, one per second, I'll slow down. Now let's remember that we're looking at load versus latency.
Mm-hmm.
Our latency, this is very, very fast stuff. Let's just say you had 100 milliseconds. Now that's, you know, a tenth of a second. It's very real, not to your user.
Right.
Okay, it's only real to your server performance, where if you started adding 100 a second that were each a tenth of a second, you'd have a mess. So you can take, you know, you can take that one time. And then your server's starting getting heavy, you're scaling out in Azure, you're starting to hit your limits. And we haven't got all this stuff in place yet. This is just the vision. Then you can say, don't do that right now. Or it's the middle of the night, you drop back, you're not even fully using your minimum number of servers. It's like, dude, go for 10% now. You know,
yeah.
Take more. So there's a lot we can do just deciding whether we're going to keep the data.
And that's interesting because it feels like diagnostic source, and Anthony spoke to this, is more of what is happening now, and logging is more of what happened.
I think that is a really good way to think about how it works and how the data flows. The thing that I would add to that is that as we go through, you know, we're recording stuff, we're making decisions, we know what's happening. At the end, I think we will very often, perhaps not quite universally, but maybe pretty close, we're going to look at what we have, look at this state, and ask the question, is it interesting?
Right.
Or what is interesting about it? So for instance, it might be the time you took on three different steps. Or maybe you only care about what the time is if it's over a particular value.
Right.
If your routing took more than 100 milliseconds, then you want to hear about it.
Then I'm interested.
Then I'm interested. If it took 10 milliseconds, I don't care if it was 8 or 11. But then I could either write out to event source, I did it, not write anything at all. Or I could say, here's the interesting things I think you might want to look at. And we can record that out through event source. So, you know, this is this tool that we can use to have much richer experience understanding our application. And then once we have that, then we're likely, perhaps not universally, but perhaps universally, we're just not there to that decision yet, then being able to put that out if we need to.
That's interesting. And so as an application developer, you would use the diagnostic source, but before you even start using it, you'd have to think about what is interesting for this application to
yes.
diagnose, and when is it interesting?
So the really special thing, and the thing that I really want to make sure that we all, it's like, there's things about testability that were really profound. The really profound piece here is that in the normal running of your application, back where your application logic is, you say something interesting happened, I'm going to call a method. At any point in the future, that method can be written. Initially, during development, do a console write line in there.
Yeah.
I don't care. then later you can build in the pieces that you need. And as those things evolve, you can take advantage of that. So if you get the right pieces in, you can build out this diagnostic piece later. So I want everybody to start thinking about putting those calls in. I don't care what you do. They can be no ops. Okay, it's getting them in that is the big lift. The other thing, though, is that we have to remember that there is one group in the world that is more interested in profiling, diagnostics, logging, all of that than anyone else. One organization. And you can guess what that organization is.
All of us, right?
No, there's one organization that's more interested in that than anyone else.
Oh, well, tell me. I want to know.
You work for them.
A Microsoft, yeah.
Yeah. So Microsoft could not have done what they have done with the operating system, with Word, with .NET, with anything, without massive amounts of understanding of what's going on. They're also on the front of the understanding. Big stacks of data do not solve your problem. What solves your problem is using big stacks of data or refining it to small stacks of data to provide the understanding.
I see.
And so it is as important to the average developer that this exists inside ASP.NET 5 as it is that they can now use it. Mm-hmm. Now, because it is, that's where it resides right now. It'll push out, I'm sure, that right now, you just get that call in there. It doesn't matter whether you can use diagnostic source right now. If you get that call into that method, you can control. You can do it later. You can get diagnostic source in there later.
I see.
We do something better than diagnostic source. Do something better than event source. If your code leaves a Windows box, and we're not going to have event source off of a Windows box, mm-hmm. you know, this is going to look different, then we'll be able to, inside those methods, we're going to be able to do the work that we need. Now, an application may have 500 of those methods because they're very specific. They're not like, they're not logger.write. I mean, they're not debug.write. These methods in your code are this happened. So you might have 500. But you still then, you have in a separate spot 500 methods that somebody can look at over the whole life of the application to understand what they need to understand about
it. So let's see if I can be a little bit more clear so I can understand.
Great.
So you have these methods that you're writing that are triggered or you're expecting these methods, I want these to be called when something happens.
Right.
And so you're just saying, for now, just even write an interface for them.
I don't know that you'd want to go as far of an interface, but you do want to think about it that way, okay? Because you could just think about it later. You do want to think of the data that you want to get across to that, okay? So that is something that you want to think about. But it's like, okay, it's begin request. What do you want to send?
Yeah.
You can do this.
Yeah.
You know, HTTP context.
Yeah, you want the context. You want maybe, well, the cookies are already in the context. You might want to know the route that was called.
You might want that.
You might want to know.
You want to know who you're calling from, of course. But you're going to be able to get that just through get member names. So you don't actually have to pass that. So you're going to have a few things you want. Well, they can get the stack if they need it.
Yeah.
You don't need that. You want just what can I easily, very, very efficiently. I don't want to do any, no string format here.
Yeah.
Okay, so don't do any creation of strings. But what is my thing I can pass across? And then once you get over there, you decide what needs to be done.
I see. So you're saying that anytime something interesting happens in your application, just write up even a static method for now that says my special tracking dot make up a name and then let the IDE make the method for you with the right parameters.
You're going to have to make up the right parameters.
Right. Well, I know.
Yeah.
With
right.
the right parameters.
Yes, absolutely.
Ask.
The only thing I'd add to that is that at least in C#, I would probably do a little bit of work to set it up so it's not a static method, just in case you ever want to use IOC. I personally believe IOC does not belong in logging, that we change it so rarely that we can hard code that in these other methods. It was because we kept putting logging right in line. We had logger.write. That's why we needed IOC.
Sure.
We don't need IOC anymore. Right. So that's my opinion. But fine, somebody says you have to use IOC for logging. As long as you're calling an instance method, you can make it all work.
And that's awesome. Yeah. So as long as you have places where you are keeping track of 50 places where this is important, write your method, think carefully about what you're passing into them so that you're not going to cause any performance issues, and then you're on your way to doing sort of a diagnostic type source.
Exactly. You're on your way to having what you need at production. I want to say it that way because I believe that just like we could talk about IOC when we were working on testability in that whole arc and all the things on it, I think here production is the main arc on that. And I think you just explained that very well. I do want to go back to one tiny detail, which I said badly. When I said an instance, what I meant, and this is in the SLAB or semantic logging application block pretty well, is that you want to have a class which has a static member, which is an instance of that class, which is hard to say out loud and have anybody understand.
It's like
singleton. It sounds complicated. Yeah, it's not. Look it up. So that's what you want to be doing so that your instantiation is off in that class.
Right.
But so it's not, you don't want to instantiate all over the world. That would be really annoying.
It's just like a singleton type
pattern. It is a singleton. It is exactly a singleton pattern. It's just a singleton pattern that's hard-coded instead of being through IOC. So yes,
awesome.
Absolutely.
That's awesome. So now, but the thing is about it, which is interesting, and I don't think we've emphasized this enough, is, okay, we just made all these methods and it makes sense, but now we're talking about this needs to be in production as well.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Oh, I get insane when people talk about things like turning assert off in production. Like having it be on, off, you have no choice. I'm like, if I have a bug, I'd really like to know how my asserts are going, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know exactly how we're going to tie that into that kind of contractual stuff. Right now, this diagnosability or production is a little bit divergent right now from ideas around contracts. I believe that they will naturally come together in the next year and that we'll have a more of a single, I want to know what's happening in production. We, of course, want to be able to turn this stuff off. I don't want to run an assert every single time, assert not,
yeah.
every single time I go into every single method. But I do want a way to say, hey, help me here. Yeah. And so let's just imagine this. Let's just imagine for some reason we had a null HTTP context. Okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a problem.
Small problem.
Yeah,
here.
Huge.
Okay. But we want to know when it's happening because it only happens some of the time. So now we're freaking out going, I got a problem here. So if we have a begin request and you pass the HTTP context in and we're off in this method, now we'll be able to say, oh, wait a minute. Now we do care, or we do care when the caller, you know, when it's this caller, this is the controller that we're calling from, or we can break into that for the specific situations that we care about. If we're in ASP.NET 5, we can even push that code out live.
Right.
So this really is going to help us with our production story, is the fact we don't have to wait for a recompile. But there'll be a lot of ways to turn this stuff. There'll be a lot of dials, I suspect. We already have the dials for event source and ETW, and I suspect we'll get some dials on this whole diagnostics source story. I just don't know what they are just yet.
So for me, this is feeling like we're delving into, because it's on production, it feels like this is stepping on the toes of telemetry, but are they not the same thing? Are they the same thing?
Well, you absolutely are. And so telemetry is very interesting. But we tend to do telemetry when we say that word. What we tend to mean is do something magic to my app so all these things just get recorded, okay? And this is a little more active. This is a little bit more. But we absolutely want this holistic view. And it's one of the things ETW, and it's actually the operating system ETW that's shown us this, is that we want a holistic view. It gives us a holistic view of our entire box and what's going on. Now we're saying, give me a holistic view of what I can see right now, what might affect this application right now in a very direct way, not in garbage collector or some indirect way. And so we can get a hold of that and play with it and work with it and reason about it if we need to, when we need to.
Awesome. Well, this sounds really interesting.
It's great stuff.
I know.
I'm so excited.
So where can people go to find out more?
Wow, Anthony. So obviously we've got your Channel 9 video. This stuff is really new.
Yeah.
And so the semantic logging application block is absolutely where to go for some basic stuff on this whole semantic idea. So you've got your application, you've got your application logic, and you want that to work the way you want that to work. But you add just single calls in there passing the right data. This is not a string format of that data. You actually pass that data. And then it talks about how to use that data for the purpose of logging. But I'm going to argue that you should think about it as putting in a point of future control, putting in a point that you could later add a logging statement, or you could later add some internal diagnostics with diagnostic source. So if you take that approach and you start by building that, either call ETW, which is difficult to use in development without SLAB, or you just do a console.writeline right now, and then you later put it in a debug block. It doesn't matter. That's, I think, is the really super big thing. That's where you go for that. For diagnostic source right now, ASP.NET 5 source code. I mean, it's really new.
I see, yeah.
It's really new. And recognizing that we're talking about that part, that's our next bleeding edge step to get where we can truly understand our production.
I think it's really interesting that by going through the exercise of actually thinking about what you want to look at as a method and what you want to look at when it's in there, it makes you think about your application differently and maybe even, and this is not a word, betterly. You know what I'm saying? I mean, because now you're thinking about what's important.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And in it, you already have a method name. And many of these are going to be like, this is on another class. Mm-hmm. So you can use your method name if that's the word, that the thing that makes the most sense. So absolutely, it gives you more information in the body of your code, makes you think about it differently. And if you're sitting there going, okay, I need to think about this. This is an important point. And I'm still in the habit of saying log, but it's really now more than that. I want to mark this point, and I want to mark this point, and I want to mark this point, and I want to mark this point. Wait, am I doing something that is inherently complicated, and I need to ensure that this all makes sense? Mm-hmm. Routing would be an example of that. Or have I just written this in a way that I can just step back and do it a little differently and have a little bit less of that, I would need to know this. Got it. I think that's the question you ask. Sure. I might need to know. And that's the thing that I think we want to hang on to.
Well, this is awesome. Thanks for spending some time with us.
It's been great fun.
Yeah, how do you like Dev Intersection so far?
Oh, I've had such a good time here. So this has been a little easier for me than some, but I'm talking about core C# stuff right now here and in London at SDD conference in a couple of days. So I also am very passionate about C# coders getting better. I was talking about GC and allocation on Sunday.
Nice.
So, I mean, I think we really want to also just really be passionate better about writing code. And so I'm still doing that. I'll be doing debugging day after tomorrow.
Awesome.
And I just did C# 6, and it's great fun.
7's looking fantastic.
Yeah, and I didn't time things well. I only did 5 minutes on 7 when I meant to do 10 on it. But I have started my notes on that, so I'm ready to start showing people what the team's talking about. Of course, right now it's a list like this, and it'll be a list like this. But the pattern matching is amazing, and there's a really, in the design notes, I wish I knew which date so I could send people straight to it. There's an example using link and the let statement in link and the match where you hand it a list of primitive shapes. Okay, this works in their prototypes. You hand it a list of primitive shapes. It calculates the area differently based on what that shape is. A circle is calculated differently than a square. You get out inside a link statement, this is a 10-line link statement, not too bad. You can read it really easily. It has every calculation right there in line. And what you get out is a list of the primitive and its area. Is that amazing?
I'm just saying.
No, C# 7 is going to be awesome. That, tuple support, plugging a couple of holes. I think we're going to finally get that private protected scope. It's going to have, probably again, like half a dozen or a dozen little things that'll move us forward in the general, probably the general pattern matching, return value kind of direction.
I'm really nudging for the tuple support because I love the Python where you can return two things at once with a comma. It's my favorite. Sorry, okay. I love that stuff.
I'm going to tell you though, my experience was I went in saying, I have been wanting this feature so badly in .NET. Now I have it. And I would say that I used it fairly often, maybe 6 or 8 times. And all but one of those times I pulled it out. In Python? Yeah,
okay.
I used it. And I pulled it out most of the time.
See?
Most of the time, it was telling me my method was doing too much. So it's not always true, and I do want to get it, and I agree with you. But in terms of how much we actually use it, it's basically right now, you will use it to replace every ref and out parameter you have today. Yes. And if you've gotten to the point, you know you're not supposed to use ref and out more than you need to. You've gotten to that point that you said, I have to have a ref here, I have to have an out here. Then yes, absolutely.
See.
But I also want to clean up the framework, and that's going to be hard. So like try parses, I want try parse to return that instead of the silly, ref parameter and all the work you have to do around that. So yes, and I look forward to what we do next with it. because I think, but it's going to be hard to get into the framework.
And see, my I'm selfish, right? I wrote a lot of linear algebra stuff, like an eigenvalue decomposition.
Right.
You need to return a matrix.
Yes,
and a
okay,
vector.
You need it.
Right, so it's just B, right?
I'm the
only guy in the world that needs that.
No. You know, there are times. I mean, like I said, it's in my Python Django code, one place that I absolutely wanted to leave it. So I'm glad we're getting it. There's places to use it, but I went in thinking I'm going to use all the time. I'm going to love this thing. And I'm like, most of the time it's given me a message that I did too much.
Well, thanks for spending some time with us. Again, Kathleen Dollar. We're here in Las Vegas for Dev Intersections. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time.
Okay. So on.